Okay, so Andrew, if you had to tweet your profile, what would you say?
Oh, I don't use Twitter. Sorry. I'm kidding. You promise me only yes and no questions. This is if I have to think, the deal's off. Yeah. I'm a strategy first global marketing and sales consultant. My goal is to help all of my clients be able to convert everyone they touch into voracious advocates for their brand.
Welcome to my show, Jagged with Jastravi, Conversations at the Edge with thought leaders from the marketing, branding, and business world. Hi, Andrew. It's so nice to have you on my show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So, starting from what you just said, Andrew, what is your strategy first approach?
Well, let's start with defining what I mean by strategy first, because that's always a question that it's easy to say, but it's a challenge to learn and do. Most companies spend a fortune on what we call the tactical side of marketing, websites. Even in the old days, brochures, boxes of donuts to visit their clients, all of these things that are sort of tactics. But none of that means anything and is very low impact and high spend if you don't have a core strategy, which means do you truly understand who your customer or customers are? Not just who they are, but what matters to them? What are their pains, challenges, needs, desires that you can resolve? That's step one of the strategy. Then the second is how do you, as a company, how are you able to resolve those very issues, challenges, pains, problems, and otherwise in a way that eliminates all of the other solutions that you do it better than any other solution to those problems that people have? And when you gain that understanding, and also what about you is different that actually matters to your customer. That's where you get the magic ingredients to build that strategy as to who you are. Then you can start to go and build the tactics to go out and do it. So I've seen companies that have millions of dollars invested in the very things that they're proud of their company. Oh, we do this, 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 and that. And when you talk to the customer, why do you do business with these guys? None of those items matter. So a true strategy is really meeting people at their model of the world and letting them know that they're heard, listened to, and that you have a solution for their problem.
That's
Hope that
right.
answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So how often do you find that in the companies, are completely clueless about their customers? They sort of, they have a strategy which has absolutely no sort of connect with who their customers are. And how often do you find that lot of people at the top, the senior managers, have completely disconnected with their customers?
You know, completely clueless is exists, and we have worked with completely clueless. But usually, it's more about blind spots. It's more about a belief that's existed for an extended period of time within the organization, or beliefs that exist because they've never asked the questions. So, and it's incredible. The total disconnects that I can think of, that you just kind of go, what the hell? It's typically somebody who was thrown into a role that they weren't prepared for at the top of the organization. Whether it's dad decided you're going to now take over the business, son, so you come in and run it, something similar. And there's also cases where we've worked with private equity where they've purchased companies that they thought that they understood and they didn't, and put the wrong person at the top. So it's a combination. But normally, what it really boils down to is that lack of qualitative research at the customer level to then form. Many companies are out really promoting things that they're very proud of that the customer isn't that interested in. You focus, like for example, one client of ours years ago was bragging about all the things that they did as a company they were extremely proud of. In the it was that they made their products out of US steel, that they could paint any color, that they met ANSI standards, that they had ISO. And at the end of the day, all of the things they were bragging about to their customers were just the minimum you needed to be in that business. If you didn't do all of those things, you couldn't make that product because it wouldn't pass the regulatory standard to be used. Mm-hmm. So when we did the qualitative analysis to find out what are the reasons you do business with these guys, number one, you answer the phone. People right. love the fact they could reach somebody. Number two was, when I, as a buyer, have a run and I need that package that I don't have in inventory, they're the only ones who could readjust their schedule and get it to me at a reasonable time. All the competitors are months. Right. Number three was, when they goof and we have an issue, they take responsibility and they fix it. So at the end of the day, the reason people did business with them had nothing to do with steel and paint and all that kind of stuff. It had to do with personal touch and service. Mm-hmm. And when they completely changed how they went to market and talked about that, customers who weren't doing business with them goes, oh my goodness, there's somebody in the market who can do that? I'm switching. And that company more than doubled in business in 3 years and was sold, which was the end game of that project, was to get them sold.
The other thing which is very interesting from your website and from a little bit research that you've done is the fact that you advocate the fact that every touch point, you know, has to become a voracious advocate of your brand. You know, so
yeah.
How do you sort of, you know, so and you mentioned stuff like, you know, that even people who are not really your customers can actually recommend you to others. So that we found that very interesting. So can you sort of, you know, elaborate on that, Andrew?
Yeah, let's break it down because there's different parts to the whole statement. It's quite a mouthful. But if you break it down, first of all, converting every touch doesn't mean every customer. Because and the best examples of it are probably luxury brands. How many people out there are huge advocates for Ferrari, but have never bought a Ferrari, never could buy a Ferrari? And the fact that they have all of these advocates out there go, oh my God, Ferrari is whatever you perceive it to be, is part of the allure that gets the people with the money to buy it. So every touch is anyone who comes in contact with your business, your brand, or your people who are part of your brand. So that's the first part, is who are we talking about? Anyone whoever encounters the name, the look, the products, the people. Then, so that's every touch. You want to convert them to voracious advocates. What's a voracious advocate? An advocate is somebody who says, I do think it's a good thing. A voracious advocate is one that in a conversation, someone says, well, I'm thinking of doing business and buying something. The voracious advocate is the one who goes, you know, you'd be an idiot to not contact them.
Right.
I can't get enough of them. Every time I have contact with them, I feel great. They're the ones that don't just say, yeah, they're okay. They're the ones who go out and say, they're the ones that climb to the hilltop and shout the benefits and the feeling that your brand inspires. And then, of course, the brand is really who you are as a company, not your logo, not your look, not your feel. But basically, your brand is, what are people saying about you when you're not in the room? What do they feel about you when you're not there? Right. So the idea is, everyone that ever comes in contact with you, your brand, and your people should be converted to people who go out and promote and grow your business. So often in that the concept of the sales funnel, we see this idea, we in the US, the real hard edge sales guys that give sales a bad name, they talk about kiss or kill.
Right.
So if you talk to them and they don't want to buy, get rid of them. Right. We say no. We say if they don't want to buy, still provide them with service and otherwise, and collect them at the bottom of the funnel, which we call the hourglass, so that they can continue to be advocates for your brand. One of the biggest deals I've ever had in my entire life came to me because I refused to do business with someone that I wasn't qualified to help, who had a cousin that needed what I do. And it was a long-term engagement that made a great deal of money for our company that never would have come in my lap had I not referred a piece of business that I could have faked it till I make it, and probably lost. But instead, I helped this gentleman find the right consultant for his challenge, and it turned into a massive deal. That's about converting into advocates.
Now, coming to another topic, you've been working internationally for a very long time, Andrew, and you've told me, you know, stuff about, you know, working in South America, and you've also been to India, and you've eaten rotis and gone to Baroda. So how do you look at you know, this evolving landscape for international marketing now, given the fact that the world is changing?
I've been doing global trade before the internet existed.
Right.
So, you know, back in the days when you did your prospecting with telexes and faxes and phones, right, and you know, manuals and things. So the data generation has made it a lot easier and a lot more dangerous, because people tend not to do the level of due diligence and study that they should to understand the right market. I mean, I remember sitting at a trade show in Germany, and I tell this story all the time. And a gentleman would come up to the counter and say, we are the number one dealer of this type of product in our country.
Right.
And we want to be your partner. And we would say, thank you. And we take his business card, we put it on the table. We'll be in touch.
Right.
And as he walks away, another gentleman who looks like he could be his brother comes up to the table. We are the number one distributor of this product in our country. And by the end of the day, mathematics, the laws of mathematics have gone, because right, we'll have met 9 or 10 number ones.
Right.
Last I checked, you can't have 10 ones.
Right.
But so you know, what happens now is that because of the internet, it's so easy to create fog to look like something that you're not, that companies have to be even more cautious. And we play a much larger role in so many of these companies, if it's nothing more than just verifying a lead. So last week we got a call from a client who said, hey, there's a guy in, I don't want to say the country, but who claims to be the right player for us. And we reached out to one of our affiliates in that country. They did the due diligence to find out it was literally a guy who lived in his parents' house,
right,
hoping
right
to start a business.
Right.
So you know, those factors exist. And then the legalities of, you know, what rights do you have as a company in other countries? I've seen over the years horror stories where, say I met with someone in country X, and he said, I want to be your distributor. And while we're contemplating it, he's hired a lawyer and registered our name under his name in the country.
Right, right.
So now when we choose somebody else, we have to fight to be able to use our own name in that country because of that person. And it's just to complicate us legally.
Right,
so there's so much to know. And that's why when companies decide to go global and they want to expand, they need expertise. They need to know which are the small stones you step on to keep your feet dry when you cross the river.
And one more thing which I wanted to sort of discuss was the lot of work that you are doing now, especially in the, you know, area of predictive AI and data analytics.
Sure.
You've done, you know, you've done work around, you know, how could, you know, if somebody's selling off a large catalog, how you could, you know, upsell and cross sell products and stuff like that. And that's mm-hmm. very helpful, you know, from for a lot of industrial products, companies, manufacturers, and stuff like that. So could you sort of, mm-hmm. you know, elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, the old system was sales guys would have the book, and they're, you know, the typical is, imagine you've got a 1,000-page catalog. Most salespeople know 100 pages at the most, and even that is a lot.
Right.
So they go out and they sell what they're comfortable with, and many of them make a great living, and it's good for them,
right,
but not necessarily for the company. So then we sort of invented this thing called the sales analyst. And what the sales analysts were doing is each month looking at what was selling, what wasn't, and then making recommendations to the sales team to try to expand. Well, with an AI, and again, AI is so many different things to so many different people. We're going to talk about it specifically to predictive modeling. So imagine you go to a home improvement store. Like here in the US, we have Home Depot or Lowe's or Menards. I don't know the stores in India, but you go into that store and you buy a home barbecue.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So for the, they say, oh, he bought a barbecue. Well, the old model was you'd go onto their website and they know who you are and you bought a barbecue. They start selling you more barbecues.
Right.
And you go as a consumer, I already have one. I'm going to use it for 5 years.
Right.
I'm not interested. So then they got clever. And they said, well, if you bought a barbecue, maybe he needs a spatula, maybe he needs a cover, maybe she needs coal for the different things that are related to it.
Right.
Now, with an AI system, what they could do instead is to compare everything that you've ever purchased against who you are, they could look at your location and otherwise so that they can create a persona for you. Right. And in the data, comparing you to the other tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of customers, people like you who bought a barbecue and live in this zip code or this neighborhood and have also purchased patio tiles, those people have an 80% possibility that they're going to buy a lawnmower.
Right.
Or there, and you can look at that past data comparing people so that the predictions and the items suggested are completely out of left field. So now let's take it to an industrial distributor. So I'm visiting I sell construction materials, and I visit a company that does roofing repair, and they're a company that does roofing repair in very expensive homes. So now in the system, comparing me to people in others, in that deal, we're selling you roofing shingles and nails and roofing material. That's what you've been buying. Well, the predictive model will look at other people who do roof repairs in expensive neighborhoods and recognize many of them have purchased racks for their truck to carry ladders.
Right.
Many of them have purchased sealants in a certain area. And it starts to help me as a salesperson suggest items that never would have occurred to me.
Right.
Now, most companies, when they're hiring salespeople, they'll hire 100 people,
right,
of which 90 of them time out. They never get up to speed. Well, what would happen if you're a new salesperson who doesn't really understand that 1,000-page catalog, and you've got this AI that when you tell it who you're visiting, will give you suggestions? What's the highest probability of the first four items that company would buy? And then you got the sales guy who's making money selling 20 pages of your 1,000-page catalog. The system is now telling him, with the existing customers, these are items you should be adding. And by the way, the marketing team loaded up all these leads, and here's the opening mix. You're now accountable to tell us what happens when you suggest. So it's a whole different thing. It makes lazy salespeople busy again. It makes new salespeople get up to speed faster. And it even allows your inside sales team, when people are calling in and placing orders, and your e-commerce, to make suggestions that are relevant to the persona and the type of business that you're dealing with. So it's quite a complex, it'd be a podcast all on its own to go through the details and map out how it works, but it's a living and breathing thing. So the no's become just as important as the yeses. The suggestion is going out to 100 salespeople today that this is a product that people are predicting. And in that 100, the first 10 go no, it will adjust that probability and maybe put a different product up higher to increase the performance. Such violence. You should be, I'll shoot my own. There we go. Here, wait, I gotta go for the big one.
Oh my God.
What happened to that dinner table? You know, the dinner table and the scandalous stuff that you're known for.
I don't know what you're talking about. Can you guys hold on a sec? I got to finish. I got to play a hand over here. Okay, I'm back.
Favorite travel destination?
Thailand.
Wife's pet peeve?
Me.
One thing no one knows about you.
There's lots of things people don't know about me.
Yeah, so
probably my artistic pursuits.
Like what?
I build all the cabinetry and furniture in my house. I work with glass.
Right.
Oh.
I make my own scarves and sweaters.
Oh.
You can knit.
You can knit as well. Can you?
Here, this is what I'm working on right now.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
In India, you will be a coveted house husband. I mean, a lot of Indian women will be, you know, falling for you after this, you know, podcast. You know,
yeah, but I don't know how to knit a sari.
Superhero? Any favorite superhero?
Chip Man. He has the ability to eat one potato chip, only one. That's a superpower.
Your superpowers, Andrew. What are your
superpower? Recognizing opportunities where nobody else sees them.
Okay. What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I sleep.
Yeah. Okay.
What's yep. You do. You do things right, and you treat people well. You can sleep much better.
Thank you for saying that, but I also got a chance.
Okay.
What? You did very well.
Yeah.
And the gun didn't feel out of place, you know, most importantly. Because of all the blasts.
It's time for a drink.
It's a very sort of, you know, enlightening conversation. Thanks for taking out the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I hope your folks, you know, that are interested, reach out, check out my podcast, The Fanglecast. Right. And I'm honored to have been asked to join your show. Thanks so much. I think folks absolutely should like, share, subscribe, and even fax and telex your company because of the